And we have a number of awards to celebrate this afternoon. So first of all, the Diversity and Student Awards have been scrolling. You've seen the many people who've been supported to come here. If there are recipients of Diversity or Student Awards in the room, could you stand up so that we can embarrass you and give you a clap? Thank you very much. Congratulations. So it's my pleasure now to hand over for the next award presentations to Carla Mazewski, who is the awards committee chair and will present the Young Investigator Awards, the Dissertation Awards, and the Ritvo Slifka Innovation Awards. Thank you.
Hi, thank you for coming. Before I get started, I want to acknowledge the awards committee who helped make this possible. Susan Santangelo, if you're here, you could stand up. Alicia Hall, and then Gabriel Dichter is not able to be here. Thank you to the awards committee for all their work. The first award I'd like to present is the Young Investigator Award. These awards are based on both their potential to advance the research field and specific papers that they submitted that were highly influential. So the pool was so competitive this year that we couldn't pick just two, so there are three winners. And I don't know if we're advancing the slides here. Okay. First, we'd like to call up Matt Lerner from Stony Brook University. Back and forth. Okay, next we'd like to call up another Matt Monscani from the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center. And next, we have Shannon Rose from the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. Okay, I don't know that she's here, so congratulations, Shannon. And next, we'll move on to the dissertation awards. And we have two dissertation awards this year. Teresa Bennett from the Offord Center for Child Studies in McMaster University. Teresa. Okay, and Elizabeth Smith from the NIMH. And next, we have the SLIFO-RITFA Award for Innovation in Autism Research. And these are awards that come with money to fund a project from the Alan B. Slifka Foundation, where really the goal is to fund innovative projects that will lead to new treatments and better quality of life for individuals with ASD. So first, we have Adam Naples for his project on behavior and brain response during social interactions in nonverbal individuals with ASD. So, Adam, congratulations.
What?
All right. Okay. And next we have Rosa Hoekstra for her project on the face of autism in Ethiopia, exploring cultural influences on autism and developing a culturally appropriate screening instrument. Rosa? Just one last note, it's really exciting to see that these two projects both focus on understudied populations, both applying nonverbal or applying neuroscience methods to the nonverbal and limited verbal population with ASD and Adam's work and then Rosa's work in Africa. So thank you, and on to the Advocate Award.
Thank you. And I should say that Carla Mazeski was herself a winner of the Ritvo Slifka Award for 2012. And as evidence of what an important award it is, the pilot data that Carla collected on a new measure of emotion discrimination has formed the basis for an R01 grant that was funded on the first submission. So congratulations to Carla and to all our winners. So now it gives me great pleasure to introduce and to give the Advocate Award for 2014 to Peter Bell for his commitment to research, advocacy, and services for people with autism spectrum disorder. And there's so much that I could say about Peter and what he's achieved for the autism community, but I will keep it brief so that Peter himself can come and talk to you, which will be much more interesting. But I wanted to just say a few words. So Peter Bell has been an active autism advocate for almost 15 years, from the time when his oldest son, Tyler, was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. Peter and his wife, Liz, were involved in the early development of Cure Autism Now, CAN, the MIND Institute at UC Davis, and the Autism Center of New Jersey Medical School. In 2001, Peter and Liz co-founded the Philadelphia chapter of Cure Autism Now. Peter was originally a volunteer at CAN while he was working for Johnson & Johnson. He was a member of the search committee that was looking for the first president of CAN, and after interviewing many applicants and rejecting all of them, the committee decided Peter was actually the best person for the job. So he left New Jersey and moved out to Los Angeles to become CEO of CAN. And when CAN merged with Autism Speaks, he eventually moved back to New Jersey to the same house that his family had previously lived in. Following the merger between CAN and Autism Speaks, Peter oversaw government relations and family services for Autism Speaks. He was instrumental in passing the Combating Autism Act in 2006, which doubled federal funding for autism research, and the Combating Autism Reauthorization Act in 2010, which held autism research funding level despite massive cuts elsewhere in the US federal budget. He's responsible for creating Autism Speaks Family Services grants, which provide funding to best practice autism service organizations. And Peter has been a staunch advocate for research, but always understanding that the purpose of research is to help improve the lives of real people. As his son Tyler has got older, Peter has started to focus more on services and adult issues, and most recently has moved on from Autism Speaks to become CEO at Eden. Peter has had been a long supporter of INSAR, and until recently he chaired our Community Advisory Committee, and he currently serves on our Finance Committee. So as an organization, we're enormously grateful to Peter, but more importantly, as a community of scientists, we're enormously grateful for all he has done to promote autism research and also to improve the lives of people with autism and their families. And I was very moved by one of the testimonies that came up in relation to this award, which said that what Peter has contributed can't be measured in dollars. He's contributed his time, his skills, his whole being to this cause. His work has made a real difference and has changed people's lives, and that is priceless. Peter Bell, congratulations. Please come and receive your award.
apologize for that. You never know how you're going to feel until you get up on the podium. And when I got that email last fall that I was going to be receiving this award, I had a moment of reflection, and the thing that came first and foremost to my mind was, I share this award with so many. First and foremost, I share it with my wife, Liz, who's been at my side, who's been my biggest cheerleader. And I share it with so many other people who have gotten us to where we are today. And our journey with autism started, I guess it was 18 years ago, when our oldest son, Tyler, who's now 21, was diagnosed with autism. And it's been an amazing journey, and one that we have met so many wonderful people who have meant so much to us, and many of those people are here in this room. Some are not, and I want to take a moment to acknowledge and share my gratitude, because this award would not be possible without the many people who helped us along the way. I'd first of all like to thank the NSAR board, Francesca, Helen, David. David was the one that started the community advisory committee. Helen took us to a whole new level, and Francesca has been so wonderfully supportive of what we've tried to accomplish. It's really hard to bring a stakeholder perspective to a scientific organization and a meeting like this. And it hasn't always been necessarily with open arms, but these three individuals have embraced the fact that stakeholders play a critically important role in what we've been able to accomplish in this field. 20 years ago, if we got this meeting together, I think everyone would have fit in this section right here. And yet, here we are in a ballroom that's the size of a football field, and not everyone is here who's at the meeting today, but I just want to acknowledge that the leadership of this society has been wonderfully accepting of the role that stakeholders play. I mentioned the Community Advisory Committee, and there are several people who have helped to bring it to where it is today, specifically Sarah Logan from the Medical University of South Carolina, Mark Shen, who just is finishing up his PhD at UC Davis, Allison Singer, the President and CEO of the Autism Science Foundation, self-advocate John Elder Robeson, and Debbie Hillebrand from the Hillebrand Foundation. There are many others, but these five individuals have been wonderful partners with me over the last 5 years as we've tried to make sure that the stakeholder perspective is always maintained in the society and in the meeting. I would be remiss not to acknowledge the three individuals who literally created first IMFAR, which was the meeting, which I think for those of you who were there may remember it happened not long after 9/11 in conjunction with the Society for Neuroscience in San Diego, and there were, I think we were thrilled to have 350 people or so there. It wasn't the most peaceful meeting, but it was one that started something really terrific. And so to Portia Iverson, Eric London, the founders of CAN and NAR respectively, and David Amaral from the Mind Institute, thank you for your vision that you started 14 years ago, and look at how far we've come. We can never ignore the fact that the federal government has stepped up in a significant way to help support autism. It's the reason why this room is as large as it is today. The amount of money that the federal government is putting into autism has risen significantly, if not exponentially. And of course, we would like to have more, and of course, we would like it to be easier to get access to that money, and I know many of you work very hard to try to do that. But this was created by some very important people in our Congress, some of whom have moved on, but most of whom continue to be staunch advocates. In the House of Representatives, Chris Smith and Mike Doyle have been incredible champions for the autism cause for the better part of the last 15 years. In fact, they co-chair the Congressional Autism Caucus and continue to want to push the federal government to do everything they can to help support our efforts to really understand autism better and to improve the lives of those who live with autism. On the Senate side, Rick Santorum and Chris Dodd were very much involved in the original Combating Autism Act of 2006, and then more recently, Bob Menendez and Mike Enzi helped to reauthorize that legislation in 2011. And I think, as everyone knows, perhaps, they just recently introduced a new bill in the House of Representatives that will continue to reauthorize this important legislation. We need your help to make sure that that gets passed. There are a number of people who've been working behind the scenes that I want to acknowledge: Craig Snyder and Kevin Roy from Icon Public Affairs, John Shestack, who is one of the co-founders of Cure Autism Now, who, if you ever saw him work Washington and march the halls with some of his celebrity friends and so forth, it was a sight to be seen, but John really was a passionate advocate. Elizabeth Emkin and Stuart Spielman also were critically important to help not only write these laws, but also to make sure that they got passed. And as a result, we've now had really over $2 billion worth of funding for autism research. Lots of federal government agencies have been involved in this. And I know that sometimes they've taken some heat from the stakeholder community, maybe for not working as fast as we would like to see them work, or to say the right things, or what have you. But I do want to acknowledge the fact that the people who are behind these agencies, the Tom Insel, who's chaired the IACC for the better part of the last decade, the people from the Office of Autism Research Coordination who work tirelessly to really improve the way in which we can track research and have a strategic plan and so forth, the people at the other parts of the NIH and from HRSA and the CDC, thank you. I don't think you get the thanks sometimes that you deserve. We do appreciate everything that you're doing in Washington and Atlanta and other parts of the world to help us advance our cause. I want to acknowledge some of my professional colleagues, some people that I've worked with closely over the years. Clara LaJonchere, who's a dear friend and someone who has been the brains and the brawn behind some important resources that are available to the autism community, including the Autism Genetic Research Exchange and the Autism Treatment Network. Clara, whoever you are, wherever you are, thank you for ever being there for Liz and me as a family and professionally. My colleague Jerry Dawson, who I think I saw somewhere over here, who led the charge at Autism Speaks for a number of years, who is so critical to important things that we now know in the autism field, such as regression and the Early Start Denver model, and more recently, the fact that autism is, for most, going to be a lifespan issue and that we have to address some of the really important issues around adult services. Thank you. And Sophia Colamarino, who was our first director of scientific research at Cure Autism Now, who sat me down about 10 years ago and explained systems biology and what that meant and how it was going to help us really make some significant traction in the autism community. Thank you, Sophia, and thank you all of you for being wonderful partners over the years. I want to say just a quick mention about the Autism Treatment Network, specifically to another parent, Richard Fade, who was the brains behind this the creation of this network, to Clara, who, as I said, was really critical in terms of helping to develop this over the years, Jim Perrin and Margaret Bauman from Mass General, who really provided critical leadership, Dan Curry from Nationwide Children's Hospital, Ricky Robinson, Sue Sweeto, Sarah Spence, all of whom really played an instrumental role in helping us to make sure that treatment is something that doesn't get forgotten in this community. To recognize that autism, for many, comes with a lot of medical comorbidities and underlying issues that get in the way of helping people live the kind of life that they deserve. And I want to say a special thanks to my wife, Liz, who I share this award with. Liz has been the person in many cases, sometimes behind the scenes, but sometimes very much in front, who has pushed me, who has prodded me, who has protected me, who has provided the kind of care that my children and specifically Tyler deserve and need, and has really done absolutely everything within her power to make the world a better place, not only for our children, but for thousands of others. And so I share this award with you, Liz, and thank you for always being there for me. And I want to dedicate this award to my three children. At first, I was going to just make it to Tyler, but I think any of you that are parents knows that all of our children are special to us. Tyler has made far more of a contribution to this world than most any other 21-year-old. He's brave. He's confident. He's got a wicked sense of humor. He's talented. He's passionate. He's loving. And he's just a remarkable young man. And I'm extremely proud to call him my son, my oldest son. And I also am blessed to have two other children who are the best brother and sister anyone could imagine. So I will take this award back home with me, and I will share it with them, and I will share it with my lovely wife, Liz, too, because they really have made me the man that I am today. All right, I'm going to lighten this up real quick. I felt like if I had an audience, I needed to impart a few words of wisdom, things that I think I would hope that you take away with you about my 18-some-odd years in the world of autism advocacy. Some of these things are probably intuitive and so forth, but I think they bear repeating. Number 10, increased attention directed to the heterogeneity of autism. I am so pleased that I've heard this word many, many times already this meeting, and I think we can never underscore the fact that at the end of the day, this is a very heterogeneous disorder, and that we have to talk about individuals and how they present with autism, and that we can never presume that something will help the entire community, but that we need to really be very concrete and specific about how we address and create things that help individuals and not necessarily try to help the entire community. When Tyler was diagnosed, we were told autism was not treatable. And I think we now recognize that it is, and that we have to recognize that improved outcomes are not only possible, they should be the norm. And that if you're not making progress, something is wrong and you have to go back and relook at what you're doing. I would ask that we continue to explore the causes of autism. And I know this is perhaps a little bit controversial, but we really do need to understand what is the underlying root and causes. And I'm saying causes plural because we all recognize, I think, that there are many reasons why someone ends up with autism. And so I would encourage this community to continue to help us understand what is behind this increase that we seem to have experienced over the last two decades. Personally, I'd like to see more attention to environmental factors. I know genetics plays a significant role, but I think we every year see some new study that says, wow, the environment plays a larger role than we maybe first thought. And I think that will continue, and I would encourage everyone to continue to look at some of the environmental issues that may be behind this increase. John Shostak once said, or was famous for saying probably, science can be hurried. And I know many people say, it can't. It takes time. Our kids don't have time. They need you to hurry. They need you to figure out ways that we can accelerate the pace of science. And I would encourage you to continue to look for ways to do that. Autism services and lifespan issues need more attention. I know there are a number of under-researched areas, but we really do need to understand what works for what kids or adults to develop the evidence base behind best practices and also to address the fact that for most, autism is not going to be just a childhood disorder. Behavior is communication. Please don't underestimate the impact that underlying medical issues can have on the quality of life. Things like gastrointestinal disorders, sleep, metabolic issues, immune issues. I'm witnessed over the years more and more attention coming to these things, but quite honestly, I don't think it's still enough. And we need to recognize that living a good quality of life involves having a healthy body and a healthy system, and we need to make sure that all of these things that can exacerbate and make autism worse are addressed. Please presume intelligence. When Tyler was diagnosed, we were told that roughly 70% of the population had an intellectual disability. Latest CDC study says that it's closer to probably to 35%. And we all know that the IQ tests that are used to determine cognition and intellectual ability are a very crude measurement of true intellect. So please remember that there's a person inside, that there's probably strong intellect there, and that verbal ability is no good predictor of what that intelligence is. We also need, and this is something that I've learned quite honestly in the last 5 years, that not every aspect of autism is necessarily debilitating. There are some qualities of autism that we should see as enabling. In the case of Tyler, he's a painter, he's an artist, and he can express his feelings and his talents on a canvas with some paint. And there are other things that his autism really makes him special. And I think this is the case, quite honestly, for every individual living with autism. So I would ask that you definitely focus on the debilitating aspects, but also let's figure out what we can take away that's positive, that can really embrace and make these individuals even more better contributors to society. And the last and number one thing on my list is, please listen and embrace the views of the people who are living with autism as well as their families. 5 years ago, I probably would have just said their parents. But there's so much that we can learn from individuals who live with autism every day, those who are verbal and those who are not, those who can share with us kind of how they're feeling and what feels good and what feels bad. But also remember that there are people who are in their lives who know them extremely well too. There are so many things that we now accept as fact. Parents years ago were saying, and in many cases we were written off because the evidence hadn't caught up yet. So I know the scientific rigor is critically important, but I really would ask that you continue to focus on what your patient is saying, what their families are saying, and take that into consideration. And I will just finish and say, please spend time with the community. Spend time with individuals. If you're on a bench and in a lab and you don't have interaction with people with autism very often, make it a point to go at least once a month. Don't mark a box because you went into an autism classroom and say, I've done that, time to move back into the lab. I've recently joined Eden Autism Services, which is a relatively large service provider based in Princeton, New Jersey, and we have 200 full-time participants that come to either our school or our adult centers or live in our homes every day. And as much as I've lived with autism for the last 20 some odd years, I've learned so much in the last 3 months by experiencing the different faces of autism, looking in the eyes of these children and adults and seeing what they're capable of doing, and seeing what happens when you give them an opportunity to show what they can do, and when you believe in them. So with that, I'm going to say thank you. And I appreciate the recognition of this, but as I said before, I share this with so many, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you, and I look forward to being a part of this society and this organization long into the future until we can say we figured autism out. Thank you.